Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 21 of A Pint with Friends. My name is Scott Smith, and this is a follow-up episode immediately to episode 20, not just numerically, but also in the subject matter. In episode 20, Shannon and I got our hands on a new product from Steamworks called Refresh, which is actually a low-calorie, low-carb, sugar-free beer. It's three beers, in fact. And in episode 20, we gave a really, really thorough review. We went through all of the different cans and tried them all out, and we actually even ranked our favorites. And it's they're all three are light beers, and they're all incredibly amazing. So we shared this episode online, and I actually shared it to Steamworks, and they actually reached out to us, and they actually wanted to answer some of the questions that Shannon and I had during that episode, which was just how this beer came to be and what was the target audience and all of that. So in this episode, I actually got to interview Julie Hanlon, the head brewer, and the director of sales, Matt Martin. So this is my first Zoom interview. Here we are in the new world where we're all trying to still stay connected, but also stay distanced at the same time. So there's a little bit of a lag here and there in terms of the Zoom interview, but it was the best that we could do, and I've polished it the best that I could. But the time that both Julie and Matt spent with me was just filled with some great information. I really, really think that you're going to enjoy it. And not only did we talk about Refresh, but they also have unveiled a new beer just this week that you can get now called 7 o'clock Cheers, which is the it's basically a beer that is supporting all those frontline workers. So I really think you should get out there and get your hands on that. Money is going to go to the UBC Hospital Foundation as well as VGH. And they've got a fund there that's going to help all of the frontline workers. And it's just a great way to honor those folks out there that are supporting all of us and helping us out in this crazy, crazy time. So I think you'll enjoy this episode, and I'm really hoping that to see some folks not only banging pots and pans, but also popping some 7 o'clock cheer. So thanks for the love, and thank you so much, Steamworks. I really enjoyed speaking with you, Julia and Matt. And now dig into this episode and pop a cold one. So welcome to another episode of A Pint with Friends. Today I'm going to be talking to Matt and Julia from Steamworks. So how are you guys doing today?
Awesome.
Thanks. Yeah, great. Thank you. Excellent.
So just to quickly, Julian, can you guys just tell me a little bit who you are and just what your titles are and what your roles are with Steamworks, and then we'll get into all my hard-hitting questions.
Okay, my name is Julia Hanlon. I'm the head brewer here at Steamworks. I just came up on my fifth anniversary here on Monday, actually.
Oh, congratulations.
So, yeah, that was a bit of a milestone. So I'm in charge of all the brewery, brewing operations and brewing and QC staff here. The fun stuff, I guess, is obviously making new beers and developing recipes, and then the other stuff that is part of my day-to-day job is just managing the brewing process, brewing employees, quality employees, and that's it.
Great. What about you, Matt?
Quality control, of course.
Yes, quality control. Yeah, lots of drinking.
Got to taste the product to know if it's hitting.
Yeah, I mean, we call it sensory. Sounds professional.
Matt, what about you? What's your role?
Yeah, I'm the director of sales and marketing here. I obviously oversee all that, those aspects of our business. I'm a little bit involved with forecasting and some of the production stuff as well. I was actually employee, I guess, number two here. Like I basically came on board in 2012 before we had even launched any products and before we had even a year before we'd even built this facility. So I've been around since day one of this part of the project, not the brew pub side, but the brewing side.
Right.
And I've had a great, been a great experience. It's been a great time with, learning a lot about not only the business, the procedures, but also just getting to know and working with a lot of wonderful people that are still here, that have come and gone and all that stuff. So it's been a wonderful eight years this July, I guess.
Fantastic. Wow. We're going to get into the new beers and the new sort of brand refresh. But before we get into that, I noticed that you guys have a new beer out this week called 6 o'clock Cheer. So can you give me, 7 o'clock Cheer. I just got that wrong.
7 o'clock Cheer.
O'clock Cheer. So what's the obvious, just explain a little bit about that, what you guys are hoping to achieve with that and where all the proceeds are going.
I can talk about the beer. So 7 o'clock Cheer, obviously, came about as an idea of a way that Seamers could in some way support basically the fight against COVID-19 and, you know, everything that frontline workers are going through right now. So what better way to do that than with a beer? So it's a pretty easy drinking pale ale. We worked with our two BC suppliers, Gambrinus Malting and Hops Connect, who generously donated the hops and the malt for the brew to make a pale ale. So it's an easy drinking pale ale using Sabro hops and locally grown Sasquatch hops and Canadian malt that was processed by Gambrinus in Armstrong, BC. So yeah, it's just a really tasty, kind of easy drinking 5% alcohol pale ale.
Does it differ from the regular pale ale that you guys have?
Yes, it's quite different. I mean, with any beer style, there's a lot of range you can have within that using different malts and hops and raw ingredients. So the flavor profile is quite different. I would say the most unique thing about it is definitely the hops that we're using. Sabro has a pretty unique, interesting character to it. Mm-hmm. So that definitely comes through in the beer. It's a really tasty beer. I definitely drink a few while I do my 7 o'clock cheers. So that's kind of the beer side of it.
So Matt, what about you? So obviously, it's a great tasting beer. It's a great cause. How did the idea of coming about to do this? Like, obviously you saw the need, you're trying to raise money. It's for the Vancouver General Hospital, is that correct?
Yeah, it's a combination of the UBC and Vancouver General, VGH, COVID Foundation that they've split into, frontline support and research. So they're splitting the donation 50-50 in those regards. It came about basically from our staff, really. In the early stages of this, there's a lot of talk about what local companies can do to contribute to, their communities with regards to battling this situation. So our staff had come up with, why don't we try making a beer that we can see if, we can reach out to some of our suppliers and see what, if they'd be interested in joining forces and working on this. And then we looked at, if we wanted to support, what would we support? And again, I give all the credit to our entire team of production staff, frontline market sales, marketing staff. Everybody was kind of keen to do something, and everyone can kind of contributed in their own way. And then, like Julia mentioned, we reached out to our suppliers, and on the ingredient side, she mentioned, but also our Westkey Graphics supplied the labels. So it really turned out to be a really enjoyable experience for all of us, with our partners, and then obviously working with the UBC and VGH, and knowing that we were going to be able to kind of contribute something. So the idea of 7 o'clock cheer was our business development manager, Catherine Lewis, it came up with that. And it just fits so perfectly because, you know, everybody was kind of, you know, involved in the whole pot banging and you know, supporting the emergency services and the communities at around that time. And I know it's big in my community in Port Moody. So yeah, it just fit. And it was an easy decision for us. So, and we're really excited about how it's kind of come together.
So what was the timeline from the inception of the idea to figuring out what beer you were going to make to now it's available this week in stores? Is that right?
Yeah, it was fast. It was because, we had to iron out, you know, obviously a partner because we have our partners on the label and stuff like that. And the biggest challenge was actually ordering labels or sleeves. You know, because there's usually about a 3 to 4 week turnover there, which is about the same amount of time as the beer takes to make. So we started talking about it to when we started really getting excited about over a few days, I think we brewed the beer the next week. We have a great brewing team, obviously led by Julia, but we have a great brewing team and they had worked on the ingredients and the styles and that's kind of what, but we obviously wanted it to be user friendly. We didn't want to do anything too crazy because at the end of the day, the whole point is to go through it and let hopefully everybody can enjoy it. So and then we just kicked it into high gear. And again, I can't give enough credit to our partners that support us well because they kicked it into high gear as well, making sure we had the ingredients and the materials to get it out. So so it was from start to actually canning, it was probably 4 weeks. Including three and a half weeks of the actual beer taken to produce.
How does that measure to, like, it's like regular beer when you're coming up with something? Typically, what is a typical timeline from conception to hitting the market?
That can vary.
It really depends on the beer. Yeah. So this one, yeah, as Matt was saying, I think we kind of landed on the decision that we were going to do the beer on a Wednesday, and I think we brewed it the following Tuesday or something like that. So it was a very tight turnaround, probably a record. But as far as conceptually developing other beers, it really does depend. A beer like Refresh, for example, was a long time in development, and a lot of, you know, like our brewing team, pretty much everybody worked on that beer, pilot, doing test batches and pilots of that beer, coming up with different flavor combinations. In some cases we're talking months, but then on the flip side, we sometimes have beers that we do one test batch of on our pilot kit and it turns out great. And we end up brewing it, you know, basically as soon as we can get packaging materials. So.
Okay. So it's just a question of scaling it up, which I'm sure you're an expert in and doing all of that. And then it's just a question of naming it, getting all of the artwork and running with it from there. One last question just about the COVID stuff. Like how, obviously your tasting rooms, the restaurant is closed, all of these things. So how have you guys adapted? Looks like you've started doing the home delivery. Like did that just come out because of COVID or was that something you guys were doing before and I just wasn't aware of at the time?
No, that was just kind of a response to COVID. And to be honest with you, I don't think anyone really knew, nobody knew what was happening or what was going to happen or, you know, everything was unclear. So we really, at every stage of our business, we were looking at it kind of day to day, week by week and kind of try to make the best out of whatever the situation we were in at that time. And so obviously we had to shut down the restaurants, which was difficult, but at the end of the day, it was easy in the sense that we were just mandated. So that was that, and our tap room as well. And then one of our goals, and I'll give our owner full credit in that one of the goals right at the get-go was to keep everybody at the brewery employed. So it was a matter of finding ways to keep people busy, jobs. You know, we do our mashups manually. And, you know, so we put some people into those roles in our warehouse, some salespeople. We had most of our production team, obviously production stayed pretty steady. So that was not an issue, but we did have issues with labor in the sense that we were losing a lot of people for the 2 week isolation periods if they had any symptoms. So we were working on a real skeleton crew, and And again, our whole team, production team and sales team, our whole staff really stepped up to the plate and put in a lot of long hours. Some guys in certain skilled areas had to work, you know, we're working 10, 12, 14 hour days, and everybody just stepped up. I mean, it was the ultimate team effort, you know, to support each other. And those of us that were off for 2 weeks, you know, just people just picked up for them. So, as far as the delivery is concerned, that was just that resulted based on our taproom sales. Off sales were doing well, but we just kind of, one of our sales reps thought of it as, you know what, why don't I look at kind of launching this program, seeing what we could do, do some deliveries for Burnaby, North Shore, and Vancouver. And he kind of took that on. And now even our brew pub starting next week is going to be doing deliveries as well. So it's just kind of grown from that.
Wow, great. That's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing how many businesses have just tried to figure stuff out. I mean, there's so many unknowns, and you're just trying to adapt on the fly and trying to keep everybody employed and keep
absolutely
keep everybody working and keep sales coming in. So let's get to Refresh. This was something that is brand new for you guys. My wife and I just happened to see it on the shelf one day. She's a diabetic, recently diagnosed diabetic. So our whole life has changed in the last, probably since last summer. We both lost 35 pounds each, which is crazy, but it's just change of diet. So for the last several months, you know, she's not drinking as much alcohol, but the other things that she's trying, they haven't tasted great. So we tried this. We absolutely loved it, as you guys know and heard. But where did that idea come from? Was there a market that you were going after? What can you give us a little bit of the history of how this beer came to be and why it's its own? It looks to be like its own brand versus just another beer called Refresh or a line of beer called Refresh.
Okay, well, this is probably one of the beers that actually took quite a long time.
I bet
that we've been talking about for a long time, and we often talk about strategically. We talk about obviously what's going on in the market, what the market demands are, where the trends are going, all that kind of stuff. So we've been talking about low-cal, lighter beers for years. Last spring, we started talking about a little bit more. We had our brewer at the time at the brew pub brewed a version of this, and we were just down there and we tried it, and it tasted amazing. Usually when I'm down there at lunch, I'll have like a taster glass of something new they brew down there. And I asked for that originally, but then they brought me a whole pint. I'm like, there's no way I'm going to drink a whole pint, but I tasted it and I literally crushed it in 15 minutes. It was so refreshing. So that's how kind of that process got kicked into high gear. We did a test batch last midsummer or like at our facility here, and released it just one batch out to the market just to kind of do a little trial. And we got some really good feedback. And so it's something that we worked on from a branding standpoint. That was a little bit more of a process too, just in that, you know, over the last 2 years, we've seen a huge spike in the demand for these RTDs, ready to drink, offerings like Nude and Neutral and all those other ones. And we've just noticed that it's pulled a lot of beer drinkers into that category. And, you know, we've been talking for, like I said, a long time about what can we do? Cause we didn't really want to get into the RTD side of it specifically, but we thought about what can we do with our brands with beer that can not only prevent people from going into that category, what can we provide them that kind of can give them what they want, that they're looking for and that kind of stuff. What can we do? You know, so that's how, you know, I mean, the whole low-cal, and I'll let Julia get into the science behind that, because in beer, it's really difficult. But we saw a need there, and so we ran these test batches, and we kind of came up with Refresh and kind of went with it. And then the slim can and the different kind of packaging or branding was just in that we actually wanted to kind of sit on that fence of RTD and beer. It's not that we didn't want it. We wanted it to look Steamworks, but different in the sense that we wanted to attract and compete directly with those RTDs. It was very strategic. It wasn't just kind of, you know, we weren't trying to fool anybody.
Right.
Like we were Steamworks. Everybody knows Steamworks is beer. Like we don't do anything else. You know, we obviously have the brew pub, but but it's beer. So we weren't necessarily trying to fool anybody, but we did want to compete head on and directly with that kind of category. So.
And I think there's a great opportunity to bring in people that either, well, think that they don't like beer, maybe, that wouldn't venture into that neighborhood in the liquor store to try something like this. Because for me, it's still very much, it's a beer. And it's the thing that I really love about it. But for other people, it's kind of, it does sort of straddle the fence. I think it sort of tastes a little bit more flavorful and a little bit better than, say, like a neutral or nude vodka soda. There's just a bit more going on, I think, for the flavor. So I think if we can bring some non-beer drinkers over to at least trying it, that's a win.
Absolutely. So how did you determine what flavors that you wanted to work with? So there's three different flavors in the six pack and the 12 pack, correct?
Yeah. So I know, like, listening to you and your wife on your podcast, you're wondering about how we came up with the flavor combinations, if they were, you know, by design to be low calorie or low carb. And I think the sort of like nerdy part of getting into
get nerdy, please.
It's really important when you're designing a beer, you kind of work backwards from what you want. So we knew that we wanted a lighter, really refreshing, drinkable beer that also was lower on the calories and lower on the carbs, and that had some nice flavor going from fruit. So we go from that just choosing raw ingredients, and we're looking at our malts. We're looking for something. You know, if you're going for the low calorie, you want, you're going to have lower alcohol, but you need to get highly fermentable malts.
Okay.
So when starting with selecting raw ingredients, we're looking for malts from our malt suppliers that have a lot of enzyme in them that can break down all that starch in our malt into fermentable sugar, which can then be basically consumed by our yeast and turned into alcohol and flavor compounds. So we're looking kind of for bang for our buck on the enzyme package of the malt we're using to kind of get it down to that drier, low calorie finish. But we don't want to sacrifice, you know, the criticism with a lot of beers like this is that they can be thin or watery. So we're trying, making an effort to sort of balance that out by using some high protein malts. I think you guys noted there's a gram of protein on our nutritional label.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we are using some high protein malts to give it a little bit more body and also have that, you know, I think you guys mentioned the head retention as well, the foam on the beer, which can be a challenge for these lower alcohol, lower calorie beers. So those were all kind of considerations in building kind of the backbone of the malt recipe. When it came to the fruit, if you add fruit during the fermentation, all that sugar gets consumed by the yeast. And so you end up with the flavor of the fruit and the aroma of the fruit, but without the sugar.
Okay.
So it's a good idea. I know, like, if you're diabetic, don't go out and have a whole bunch of guava, I don't think. But in the beer, because we're adding it during the fermentation, the yeast is actually all that sugar and just leaving you with a nice fruit flavor. So when it came down to choosing actual fruits, we just picked combinations that we liked and tasted good.
Wow.
So obviously we've gone through like lots of iterations, and I think we have a list of other flavors we'd like to try, but guava lime, cranberry tangerine, and raspberry citrus were kind of like the winners out of the gate. But I think there's a huge range we could get into with Refresh.
They are huge winners. Like, we absolutely love them. And I think that, so what were the things that didn't make the cut, and what is to come? Are there more products to come down the line?
Well, I hope so. I mean, we're certainly working on things like that. We have a team of brewers here and our QC personnel have also been really involved in this whole process of coming up with flavors. So I think we have a sort of pilot system, and then we have a sort of mini pilot system even in our lab, and we're even trying some different flavors today, as a matter of fact, with different, you know, all fruits so far. But I think it would be potentially interesting to try some more like botanicals, you know, mint, juniper, things like that. But I mean, really, the sky's the limit.
So you mentioned the label on the can, and that was one thing that we've noticed. I'm not sure I've ever seen those kind of labels on cans before. Is that something that's clearly not required? What was the idea behind including that on a can?
So you're talking about the nutritional information?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a requirement. Anytime you state anything about caloric values, you have to get approved by the whatever it is, the Canadian Food and Drug Association or whatever the association is. And then you have to list the ingredients. So you have to send it off for testing. It has to get lab tested. So for those, that information to be confirmed. And so you have to get a letter of confirmation to be able to actually use it on the label, obviously. So yeah. And to be honest with you, having the ingredients, I mean, that's part of the selling feature. I mean, beer is not traditionally known as an overly, I use the word healthy, but product. So I think having kind of the ingredients and the calories and sugar and carbs and stuff like that, I think it's part of the attraction to consumers, that they are looking for stuff that is, tastes lighter, feels like, you know, drinks lighter, and also has a more positive impact, I guess, on the nutritional aspect. So.
And I think like light beer for so long, like I grew up in the 70s, I'm really essentially an 80s kid. And so, you know, the whole ad campaigns of the 80s about less filling taste great, that whole thing. Well, they never tasted great. You were just marketing this to us. And so whenever I've had light beer or given it to me, it's just like, oh my God, this is great. But I don't think about that. I always think of that as kind of like a negative flavorless thing, but it's not.
Yeah.
I guess fruit beers you'd mentioned were sort of, they don't end up having a lot of sugars in the end. So is that kind of a go-to for somebody that might be looking at getting beer, that they should look at beers with fruit if they're worried about calories? Is that a kind of a general rule that might work for them, or?
No, I wouldn't say that. I think it is really challenging to make a light beer, and there are other craft light beer versions on the market today, but it is really a careful selection of raw ingredients up to the brewer at that brewery. So it, you know, the varying degree of, I guess, satisfaction you're gonna have with the light beer really depends on the recipe and who made the beer. So you might have, you know, you really enjoy Refresh, you could have something similar from another brewery that might be totally different. It really comes down to raw ingredient selection and techniques that are unique to each brewery. And I think, you know, like if we were to go down the path of a light beer or a Refresh that didn't have flavoring, I think we're well set up to do that as well. I think the fruit is a nice addition, particularly, you know, releasing a beer like this in the summer or having seasonal variation. Having fruit flavorings or adds a level of interest to the product. I think I really enjoy drinking fruit beers on the patio in the summer. So
absolutely,
it's awesome for that. And I think there are a lot of other products and RTDs, as Matt mentioned, that have different flavors. And I think one of the other unique things about Steamworks is sticking to our, sticking to our roots with using high quality raw ingredients. So we're not using fruit flavorings or essences or anything like that. There's no artificial flavors or anything at all in these beers. They're made with real fruit puree and fruit juice. So.
Right. So you mentioned sending those beers off to get tested. Were you confident that nothing would come back with any surprises? Like you knew going in that what you're submitting was a low calorie and would just get accepted?
Yeah. We have a great QC team here and a pretty well kitted out lab. So we are able to actually measure, maybe not carbohydrates, but we're able to measure calories. here at the brewery, but if you're going to put a label on something stating calories, that I believe the requirement is you have to have a third party verify that. So we were pretty reasonably confident that the calories that we were getting were going to be pretty close to the calories that the lab got, and that ended up, that was the case. I think the only one we weren't really sure about, because we don't have the ability to measure in house, is carbs.
Okay. But it turns out that you're meeting those marks, and it's all, everything got.
And I guess the distinction also between the carbs that are in the beer, there's no sugar in the beer. We deliberately use fruit puree in part because of the actual pectin content gives the beer a little bit more body. So that's where on our label we have 3 grams of carbs, and those are essentially coming from fruit.
So I'm not one that particularly takes seasons into my beer drinking, but at the same time, patio beer, nothing can be much better than that, just sitting there enjoying something really great, flavorful. What would be sort of the flip side if you were looking at sort of a refresh, wintery style of beer? What could we look at the future?
Well, I don't know if we have it like any concrete plans to that end right now, but I think we could get into more of like not spices, but I guess like things like vanilla, or we've been talking about juniper and things like that that just sort of inherently have a little bit more of a winter feel,
a cozy sort of feel to it.
I think like the cranberry tangerine is certainly one that could make its way into winter quite easily as well.
How much do you think is impacted by, I made the point in that other podcast about, because people can't taste this, you know, being sampled or served to them, like how is that impacted, or is it finding an audience at this point? What are you guys seeing? And
yeah, I think it's a very good question. I mean, it's obviously very unique circumstances to be launching new products for everybody and probably in any market, really. And it absolutely has been a little bit more challenging, because normally we would support this with, you know, a lot more of a marketing spend behind it with regards to, you know, advertising, but also tastings. We'd be running tastings all over the place. We'd be doing a lot of sampling. We'd have it available in draft so that people can, you know, can experience it, you know, in that through that avenue as well. So it absolutely has been a little bit more challenging, but again, for us, it's like, okay, well, all we can do is make the best with what we can do right now. So we've done that, and we're happy with the way it's going. We've got some, you know, the sales are strong, and a lot of people are trying it, and the feedback we're getting is very positive. Like, you know, not just, you know, I mean, obviously your podcast was one, but we're getting tons of feedback from consumers that have tried it, saying, and a lot of it is, there is a lot of surprise element to it. But again, that's about as much as we can kind of work with right now, because we are unable, and you know, our salespeople can't even go into stores and put it in a better location or do run programming behind it, or, you know, I mean, so with new products in these times, it's tougher, because most people going into stores, they want, like, you know, there's lineups, there's, you know, they're going in, buying what they know, buying large volume and getting out of there. So it's a really quick, there's not as much shopping going on. So with new products, it's very difficult, because people aren't taking as much time as they used to kind of shop a category. So it's definitely been challenging, but so far it's gone really well. And we've now released the 6-packs into the private sector in the last week, really. So again, it's another avenue for us to get it out into people's hands and essentially get the beer into people's mouths.
Let's just go back. I don't want to get in too much of a personal background, but how did you guys each come to beer? Julia, let's start with you. Why beer? How did you get into it? And then what was your path to get to Steamworks?
I was a university student at UBC. I grew up in Vancouver, and went to UBC and was doing a chemical engineering degree there. And chemical engineers or students, for that matter, drink quite a lot of beer. So I was doing a lot of practicing for my future career, I suppose, as a drinker in university. I guess somewhere along the lines in school.
I think we call that market research, I think, is what
the advertisers call it. Yeah. This is why I'm not in marketing. <That's> right. Partway through school, I kind of realized some of the sort of more traditional fields in chemical engineering weren't really appealing to me. So those, like, I had done co-op jobs in oil and gas and pulp and paper here in BC. And I kind of ended up through some electives coming back to things that I really have always enjoyed, which is food and baking and, you know, creating things, other things for people to eat and drink, have always been, you know, just really satisfying for me. And at some point along the way, I realized I could maybe try to segue that into a career somehow. And I remember back at that time, this was like early 2000s, pretty much there wasn't much of a craft scene in Vancouver other than Steamworks, of course, and Granville Island and Phillips on the island were kind of the pioneers in that regard. But the big brewery was Molson, and I lived on the west side going to UBC, and I would walk by it, and I remember telling my friend at the time, hey, I'm going to work there one day. And so when I graduated, I applied and got a job as an apprentice brewer, I guess. They called it a production training program. So that was a really unique opportunity to work in pretty much every aspect of their business, from supply chain, brewing, packaging, maintenance, power engineering, all facets of the business. And then while at the same time pursuing my diploma in brewing, which was very technical. And, you know, I had a lot of great resources at Molson. Like, they make kind of very consistent beer, but their quality programs are really, really top notch. And so it was really great to learn in that environment. So I was with them for about 10 years. And of course, in that time, the craft scene in Vancouver kind of blew up and was really, it was just a really exciting time in BC for beer. And I
just got disconnected from them, a little Zoom issue. So just waiting to get reconnected. Hello, Scott speaking.
Hey, Scott, it's
Matt. Hey. I'm trying to log into that. I did. Yeah, it's waiting. Okay. Awesome. Okay, talk to you in a second. Thank you. There we go. Thank you so much.
Technology.
Yeah. Oh, man. The amount of teleconferencing that I do these days with all sorts of different platforms, there's no standards. But
no,
thank you
absolutely.
For that. Thank you for reconnecting.
No worries. Just so you know, your video's not on.
Oh, let's get that going. I know you want to see this lovely face. So
yeah.
Perfect. Thank you. Oh boy, thank you, Julia. You were you were just talking about your time at Molson.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know where we got cut off, but I was with Molson for 10 years, which was a pretty invaluable experience. For me, just from on a technical level, but I think creatively, it wasn't really what I thought I would be doing as a brewer. And of course, in the meantime, there was the craft industry was booming in BC, so I felt like it was time to look for an opportunity where I would get to have a little bit more say in the types of beers that we were making and making beers that I really wanted to drink.
Sure.
So the opportunity at Steamworks came up, and it would seem like it was a great fit. And that was 5 years ago. So it's been a really exciting time, pretty much the entire time at Steamworks. We've been growing tremendously over the past 5 years, but at times it's been stressful, but it's always exciting, and it's great to be part of something like that. Again, to echo what Matt said earlier, we have so many awesome people that work here. So it's just been overall really fun for me to get to play around with making new beers and work with all these great people.
I mean, it sounds like a dream job. You're working in an industry that you love and with a company that you love that gives you all sorts of freedom, and you work with great people. I mean, how lucky are you? That's incredible.
I am really, really lucky. And especially, you know, times like right now, it's ever more apparent how lucky we are.
Well, Matt, what about you? How did you come to beer originally?
I, to be honest with you, I kind of fell in it backwards a little bit, in the sense that I had moved out here from Ontario in 2005 in sales with an energy drink company based out in Montreal. And I was just out here for a brief contract to establish distribution lines. And I ended up playing urban rec volleyball on a team, because I didn't know anybody. And it just so happened to include a few employees from Granville Island Brewing and the sales manager at Granville Island Brewing at the time. And it just, it just kind of one thing led to another. And he had a position opening up on his sales team that was very retail focused, which is obviously was my background, package sales. So, and I, to be honest with you, I didn't really think I wanted to get into alcohol or beer, just because my perception was it was all the Labatt Molson, going to concerts and and I was 30 at the time, or 29 or 30 or something like that. So anyhow, long story short is I went in for an interview and they offered me the job and I took it, not knowing how long I'd be in it. And I was with Granville Island for about maybe eight and a half years in Vancouver. And even through the process of when Molson actually bought us back in 2010, I think, 2009 or 2010. And then was actually sent out to Ontario for just a 1 year, project to work with one of their breweries out there that was similar to us that needed to establish a sales team and a process. So, and then while I was out there, our current general manager at Granville Island had been had left to go to start to start Steamworks Brewing, the brewery, and he called me and asked me if I'd be interested in come with him. So I said yeah. So in 2000, I came back in June 2012 and started immediately, and with Walter Cosman, who was the president of Steamworks at the time and basically in charge of starting this whole thing up. And we launched our first few products that September, and in bottles, pale and pilsner. And then everything just kind of rolled from there. So I've been in craft beer since, the end of 2005 or very early 2006. Yeah. So with Granville Island, Steamworks only. So it's been 8 years here this July, and it's been I think I do have an amazing job. I'm very fortunate. Love the industry. Love the company. Love the people I get to work with every day, and I'm very proud to be part of this team. So it's been a great run for me, and I do feel very fortunate.
One thing that's always I found really interesting about the local community here, the craft brewer, different companies, there doesn't seem to be like a competitive nature. You guys all seem to love each other, support each other. And why is that? How is that? Is it just you're battling big business, or you all just have the same focus? You all seem to be engineers for some reason, or come from an engineering background. So there's all sorts of new things. Like, tell me about that. What's the culture like with all the different breweries that you based on your experience, Julia?
It was a really big shift when I came from the world of Molson, where the big competitor was the blue guys, Labatt, and it was pretty much, Labatt was universally hated by all employees that worked at Molson, except for the former Labatt employees. I assume on the sales side of things to be very cutthroat, and that sort of culture sort of went all through the company. And then to switch gears and come to the craft brewing industry, if I'm being honest, when I first started my job, I was pretty worried about what people would say about me or think about me coming from a big brewery. And it was amazing that everybody just kind of was really curious, what was it like to work for Molson? And it segued into some great conversations and friendships with other brewers. And yeah, it is unique. It is very unique in the industry how collaborative the different breweries are. And, you know, I think I want to say a lot of that starts at the brewer level. Like, we're all sharing information and in terms of our own learning and technology and techniques. It's very much like open intellectual property, if you will. Like, I think the general sentiment is that if we can all make great beer, it furthers our industry further, as opposed to just worrying about our individual businesses. So it is a kind of a breath of fresh air compared to coming from a big brewer.
Right. Matt, what about you? Same question. What do you see?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, and I think I agree 100% with what Julia said. I mean, the truth is as the craft beer business has grown so significantly in the last kind of 15 years, I think a lot of it has to do with you know, sharing of information. I mean, these guys, we have breweries come and pick up supply. Like, sometimes they need ingredients here or vice versa. We go pick up something that we're out of. So it is a very, I think there was somewhat of a mentality against craft beer as a whole, against the big guys. So everybody was kind of a little bit united. I do think on the sales side, for me, you get to know all the other salespeople. Like, and I will say that one of the things I loved about craft versus the brief period I was selling with Molson, well, before Molson, but in craft, is the craft I found in the early going that the craft sales is not as pushy and as demanding, as forceful. Like with the big boys, you're always forcing, no, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. You know, I need you to do this, I need you to do that. With craft, it was always like, enjoying a tasting experience. You know, hey, what do you think of this? You know, their feedback, like, you know, our customer feedback was huge to us. Our retailers, you know, they were involved in a lot of stuff. When we were thinking about new recipes or something, we'd go around and talk to some of our retailers, like the heads of some of the stores and stuff like that. And say, hey, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? So I think it was just a much different selling process. And I think it was just a much more of, hey, we want to help your business. We want to help expand your portfolio, offer different things. What can we do to help? As opposed to what can we do to help you versus what I want you to do to help me, you know? So I think there's a little bit of that. And then I think just coming up through it, like, I know a lot, I've met so many wonderful people throughout. I mean, whether it's in the store level, the rep level, even the management, breweries, brewers, packagers, like, all the whole thing. And the truth is a lot of people have been in this industry for a long time. Usually when you're in this industry, you're in it for a long time. And so you kind of grow up. I've grown up in the last 15 years with a lot of the same people in this industry. And obviously more and more and more kept piling in, but it's just become, there is a real kind of family, you know, kind of atmosphere around the whole craft community. And, and don't get me wrong, it's competitive. Like, you know, the fact that we're all friends, that doesn't change the fact that we're still to a certain degree competing with each other. And, you know, everybody has certain relationships where they'll, you know, hey, by the way, you know, what'd you see, you know what I mean? Where there's that little kind of, camaraderie, you know, where it's just kind of fun competition as opposed to I'm going to bury you. Right. Like, that's just not how it works.
But so, tell me, who do you want to bury? I'm just kidding.
I mean, I don't want to, you know what? The truth is I've never, even when I was in my early Granville Island days, and our big competitor in those days was Okanagan Springs. And the truth is I've always seen it as, you know, not necessarily direct. I mean, they're competitors in a certain degree, but at the end of the day, we're all trying to do the same thing. We're all trying to provide, you know, better beer to our communities and to people, and give them more options, more selection, fresher beer, no preservatives, non-pasteurized, all that kind of stuff. And we're all trying to do the same thing. So we're actually, I also believe that as breweries have popped up literally everywhere, a lot of people thought it would be tough for companies like ours, or, you know, oh, there's all this competition. But the truth is, all it's doing is growing the craft community as a whole throughout the province. So, you know, when I started, you couldn't sell a craft beer in places like Port Moody even. You know what I mean? And I've lived in Port Moody for the last 4 years, and I can tell you, Port Moody is all about craft beer.
It's booming, yeah.
It's booming. They've got some wonderful craft beers there. You know, and right now, I mean, craft Port Moody's a definitely a craft beer kind of market. So everything's kind of grown, and places that you never thought would sell craft beer 10 years ago have a small brewery. But not only that, they're not only supporting that brewery, but they're supporting craft all over BC. So I see it as an opportunity for us to expand our market across the province, and that's what's happened.
Terrific. You know, I can't thank you both enough for sitting down with me today. I really, really appreciate it. Just one final little thing. Anything new that you can tell us, or things that you want to announce, or just hope that they get or try? What?
Well, I certainly hope everybody gets out to their local stores and can pick up some 7 o'clock cheer, obviously, to support the Vancouver Hospital and UBC Hospital Foundations. And then secondly, I'm just hoping for, we had such an amazing Mother's Day weekend weather. So I hope everybody gets out on their patio with whatever their patio beer is. You know, I certainly drank a lot of Refresh this last weekend. But you know, there's lots of great options. And yeah, I hope everybody's hanging out on their patios and not all flocking to Kitts Beach right now.
Insane.
But yeah, I'm really looking forward to summer and summer beers and warm weather and patio beers.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much to the both of you. I really, really appreciate it. And again, also, I think that there was a gentleman last week that brought me 2 six-packs of the Refresh after that podcast. So thank you very much for that. I really appreciate that.
You have to share it with your wife, though. That was the idea,
yeah.
Too.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'm going to... The problem is I like it too much. So like, I want her to enjoy it, but it, you know, there's more. I'm going to buy a lot of it. That's for damn sure.
Excellent. Well, enjoy.
Thank you so much. All the best. Get back to work.
Thanks for having us. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
All the best. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
And before we sign off, I just want to remind everyone again that Steamworks 7 o'clock Cheer Pale Ale is available all over BC now. It's coming to your stores. If it's not there now, it's definitely coming in the next couple of days. So go out and try that, buy that, support that. The 100% of the net proceeds from this beer are going to go to the VGH and UBC Hospital Foundation COVID-19 funds. So great cause. Get out there and please share that and tell everyone you know to support that as well. And also, don't forget to try Refresh. We absolutely loved it. I think you will too. It is a excellent light beer. If you love beer, you're going to love this. If you don't really think you like beer, you're going to love this. So try that. Share it. Let me know how it goes. I want to hear from you. Send me some pictures. Tag me on a photo in Instagram at Smitty's Brew, and I'd love to hear from you. And also, you can actually also send me a message now on Anchor. Go to anchor.fm/apintwithfriends, and you will find my podcast on there, and you can actually record a message and send it to me. And if you do something fun and creative, I might even include it in an episode. I probably will. Hope to hear from you. Thank you so much and take care. Bye-bye.